back. I'm back, Dad Pals. Trip to UK. Went great. Such a fun trip. But back in the studio, back at NBC Sports, back with producer Mike. PM didn't come over this time. You were there with us at the beginning of the year. You got to do that trip. This time you were missed, my man. You were missed over there.
Thank you, but I wasn't there earlier this season.
Did I make that up? You were, what was that, last season you were there?
2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, you don't, I went back 2 years ago.
You left such an impression that I just feel like you're there every time.
I just remember you and I got into an argument on the future of U.S. soccer at that
At Wings. At Wings. Yeah. Louis Van Gaal at the table next to us.
Yes. Louis Van Gaal, who had had a lot to drink.
Yeah, he did. He gave us a smile and basically he had a bottle of wine himself, I think.
It certainly looked like that. His face was flush.
He had that red, nice that red wine burgundy teeth look. Yeah. And we argued about us having the best athletes in the world first. We had like an Olympic argument.
There was something about that, and people around us were like, what's wrong with these two? Okay, we've known each other for a while. It's okay.
Just to make you feel better, I mean, you've known me longer than anyone at NBC. We went to high school together, grew up in the same town together. I fought with Arlo and Adam this time.
Oh, nice.
This time it was about, one of them was about how do you pronounce David Bowie's name, and we had a huge debate at the Lowry Hotel in Manchester. They said it's Bowie.
I've never once heard that.
Yeah, I know. So we went around and we took a vote, and I was the only American. Oh no, Adam and I were the only two Americans. We said it's David Bowie, and there were a lot of Brits. There was a guy from Scotland. They all had versions of Bowie and all this sort of stuff. So I pulled it up on my phone.
Yeah.
And it was a video of David Bowie saying, "Hi, my name is David Bowie," and I just lost
Boom.
It. And I tackled Arlo off his chair. That's a true story.
That's sort of like the Mesut Ozil.
Yeah, which people don't really like when you.
But guess what, people? We have video of him saying that.
We do. But also, I mean, they're just names. Let's get over it. David Bowie's amazing. And the trip was amazing. Had a blast. That's going to be one of the topics today. We'll get into the UK trip and some of the observations on the road. We got to be quick today because I'm going to have to actually.
We're going
to do it the
way
I'm supposed to do it and stick to the whistle.
Yep.
Because two Premier League games today, I'm not a part of them. I'm going to sit, drive in traffic, and go sitting on the couch and watch you guys. A Europa League six-pointer between Chelsea and Burnley. That's real.
Is that real life?
Happening.
David from the Dentist? Is this real life?
Is this real life? And then Southampton can't get out of the relegation zone but must win if they want to stay in the Premier League. They got some good results over the weekend, though, to help them close the gap. And Leicester just cruising. Let's get to reviews. Thanks again for the reviews. Keep them coming, you guys. You're the best. This one is Serve Server. That's his name. We're going to have him check a box next time to say, are you a bot? That's a very interesting name. Great pod, Kyle. Almost as great as your hair. For me, I don't think there is anybody I would want to play alongside more than Zidane. Agree. I know it's somewhat of a cliche answer, but for me, he is one of the best two-way player to ever play. The way he controlled the ball, he just made everybody around him that much better. Is something that the normal person wouldn't get. I would say that's probably mine. That's up there, Zinedine Zidane.
Yeah, picking Zidane, he acknowledged cliche. It's like, oh, guess
He's
what?
So
I
good.
Like ice cream. Well,
yeah.
We all like ice cream.
Yeah, that was kind of like when. When Real Madrid announced that they're interested in Salah. Yeah. Just get in line. So is everyone else. Who, by the way, I got to see Salah in the flesh at Anfield. That will be the second topic. We'll talk Manchester City. And maybe leak in a little bit of Manchester United as the third topic. But getting into the first one, UK observations. Actually, Zidane's a good transition. So I got to UK early. I flew over to London on the red eye and got in Thursday morning and went to catch up with a buddy of mine, Thierry Henry. I'll drop that name right now.
Never heard of him.
Yep. Went to just go catch up with him in London, and he was telling me about Zidane. We got into talking about VAR and the Buffon, Michael Oliver, and there's been a lot of crazy things happening recently. And then, actually, after I left, was the craziest, where they called the players back out from the locker room to have a penalty that they had missed, handball, I mean, just let's not get into that. That'll take too long. Absolutely crazy.
And then I saw your tweet saying that.
Yeah, which has gone viral.
Lineker loved it.
Lineker was ready to come back and play in the 1986 replay until I told him that his golden boot would have to be taken back because now there could be a new leading score. For this is very tangential. Just go on Twitter and look at my feed, and that'll catch you up. But Thierry was talking about how, like, you know, now with communication and referees and, you know, someone watching on a screen, he said, well, to tell you the truth, we've had a version of this for a while. If you go back to Zinedine Zidane's red card against Italy in the World Cup final, Thierry said he was sitting on the bench. And we all remember that. I mean, that was one of the most memorable World Cup finals for the wrong reason. One of the greatest players to play in a World Cup final. I mean, 1998, he was the man. He got them the World Cup in that final. I mean, just incredible performance, two goals. I remember them putting his image up on the Arc de Triomphe afterwards. Mm-hmm. This one, the opposite version of that. I mean, his last professional game, I mean, heartbreaking because I friggin' love this guy. He was so much fun to watch. But he was saying that the referee didn't see it. No one saw it because it happened, as we know, all the way down on the other end, and they were counterattacking the other side of the field. And he said the referee's assistant didn't even see it. He was at midfield, and Thierry and some of the guys on the bench were just watching him, and they said that it was communicated by someone watching.
That's amazing. I've never heard this.
To the fourth official, and that's how the referee ended up hearing about it. So this was kind of VAR before VAR even existed. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
He was saying, you know, we've been dealing with this for a while, but we won't get into VAR today. There's too much about
also,
that.
You know,
although the Premier League did vote not to bring it in.
Thank God.
Next season.
Although, you know, Henry's an interesting name to bring up with VAR, considering they wouldn't have been to the World Cup.
Oh, yeah. Don't bring that one up. I didn't.
Yeah, I think that was wise.
Yeah, he would have kicked me right out of his house. So, UK trip was amazing. You know what? This was the first time we've done the pundits exchange. We've done, you know, us all going over there, mm-hmm. the US-based crew, and joining our UK crowd to kick off seasons. The first time we did it was like in the final stretch of a season.
Yeah, the first two seasons, like in April. We did it in April.
Yeah.
The second season of our coverage, which was who won that title? That was Chelsea.
Yeah.
Right, no.
No, wait. Second season when we went over?
One of them was Leicester. The third one was Leicester. No, the first one was Leicester, I believe. Then the next one was when Chelsea won the title, I believe.
Yeah. So this was cool because Graham and Lee got to come over here and see the studio. And have one of the craziest days the studio has ever seen. Four live games. I mean, how many hours were you guys on air? 11?
Well, we went on the air at 6:30 in the morning, and we didn't go off the air until 5:30,
I think. That's the longest studio day we've ever had.
It's pretty close.
Probably up there with a crazy boxing day.
I think
day.
Some of the boxing days, the first couple of seasons, we had a lot of post-game stuff.
So Lee and Graham were, I got little studio links and got to watch some of it, but I was over there so I couldn't see the coverage. I heard they were amazing, which doesn't surprise me.
They're fun. They're so great to have, yeah.
And I'm surprised that they actually survived. I wonder if they want to come back next year for Pundits Exchange.
We'll see.
We'll see. But They were incredible. And what's cool about going over there is you just get a different perspective. Like, obviously, it's amazing to get to go and travel around and see the game in the stadiums that we cover. And I've been to a lot of the stadiums before, but there are many I haven't been. Like this time, I went to the London Stadium, not for the first time. I went to the London Stadium during the 2012 Olympics to watch Usain Bolt sprint there, which was one of the coolest sporting things I've ever seen. 80,000 people going absolutely berserk as he's there, like doing the stretch, and you know he really pumps up the crowd, sort of WWF style when he's on the line, and then everyone goes to get on the line, get in the whatever those things are called,
the blocks.
I should have known that. And it's like dead silent. 80,000 people that are going berserk just go. I mean, you could honestly like hear people texting. I mean, it was so quiet, and then bam, gun goes off, and
under 10 seconds later.
Yeah, later. I mean, that's it. That's the whole event.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, it's still worth the price of admission. I mean, it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Not as cool to watch a football match there.
Yeah, describe to people what it's like, because the stadium wasn't built for soccer.
Yeah, I mean, it's, You know, we talked about this, their first game. Remember when we did the West Ham's first game at the London Stadium? And we even showed in the Barco wall sort of a wide shot.
Barco wall is this big screen that's behind
the
guys.
One behind us. We always throw up the pictures and the articles and the highlights and the live shots. And we before a ball was kicked, we knew it was going to be tough because the great part about these old stadiums, you know, Anfield, which I got to go for the third time this past time and call their game against Bournemouth. You know, Anfield, Old Trafford, White Hart Lane before it was knocked down. I mean, some of these incredible old stadiums, the proximity to the field, the intimacy, even for a monster stadium like, you know, Anfield's huge and Old Trafford huge, you still feel like you're right on top of the field because the first seat starts, I mean, 4 yards from the sideline. And also has a steepness. I mean, really goes up the grades pretty dramatic. So even when you're way up, you feel like you're overhanging the field. The new stadiums, even ones that are designed for football, I mean, even the Etihad and the Emirates, it's a real gradual stand that goes really far out from the field, and the first seat is pretty far from the sideline. I mean, they do it to obviously get the most seats that they can. Right. And you know, there are so many architectural issues that go into designing it. But the London Stadium is bizarre because typically when you have a track around the field, you already have an issue because fans are going to be so far away. What they have at the London Stadium is the first bowl. That first tier actually is retractable and will go away on a hydraulic system from the stands, the permanent stands, and go closer to the field. So go watch the game. I mean, that's that stand even closer, and it's still a good 20 yards from the sideline, right? And then it creates this weird situation of now there's a huge gap between the second and third bowl and that first lower bowl. And on the gantry, you're up kind of at the top of the second bowl, and you don't feel like you're in the stadium. You feel like it's kind of like going to Wrigley or some of these places that have, like, you know, those buildings on the outside of the stadium where you can, like, buy a roof seat. It's kind of what it felt like. You feel like you've climbed a tree or you're in, like, an apartment building outside. So it just creates a serious issue for especially a team that had one of the most intimate and difficult places to play, the Bowling Ground at Upton Park. I mean, Bowling Ground, That was right on top of the field. And so West Ham fans, you can tell, are really struggling with trying to get that environment going. So it's cool to go over there because you get all these little nuances, these little perspectives. But also, you know, you see things from a point of view in terms of, you know, being close to Jose Mourinho at Old Trafford and seeing his body language and being able to watch Paul Pogba when the cameras weren't on him, when he was sitting on the bench and waiting to see if there was any interaction there, and how the coaches communicate with their team from the technical area. You know, we see on the camera them dancing around and saying all sorts of stuff, but now I actually got to sit there 20 yards from him and hear some of the things that were being said. But also, I watched Trent Alexander-Arnold. I mean, we'll get into Liverpool, but I watched him off the ball a ton and was so impressed with the player that he is. So it's good because not only do the fans get to hear Lee and Graham get a different perspective in the studio and freshen things up and, you know, hear different opinions, different personalities, but we also get to sort of change our vantage point and finish the season with a new perspective, a new take on things. So I thought it was great. I loved it. Seems like the fans loved it. Way above my pay grade to decide whether or not we're bringing it back. But I think we'll see the pundits exchange again.
And maybe another skit.
Yeah. And by the way, bravo on the skit. Mike Carey, the creative director on the pundit exchange skit.
I can only work as well. You know, it's only as good as my actors.
Is your talent. Yeah. No, I think actually the real thing is good directors make talent look better. I actually think, I mean, if you go through Hollywood, there's a lot of good directors that make average talent like myself look good. So that was fun.
Well, look at that. You're right on here.
See, I mean, Pundits Exchange already has me sharper, already has me ready to go on the next topic, which is Liverpool. So I was at Anfield. This was an important game for them because it was coming off of an incredible European night. So they got through Manchester City on their way to the Champions League semifinal where they face Roma. And the big question before the game was, how would Klopp approach this one? So I drove up that morning from London. It was like a 4-hour up, over, I don't even, yeah, up and over.
London.
Yeah.
To Liverpool.
To Liverpool.
Up.
Up and over.
Northwest.
Yes. So, got there early. It was like a 4-hour drive. Beautiful English countryside, by the way. Mm-hmm. It was really cathartic to just sit in the car and not be on my phone, not do anything, no music, and just look at sheep. It got me ready for the call. And I got there early, which was cool because I cruised around the stadium a little bit. I went over to Shankly Gate, and you know, iconic spot for their most would say their best ever manager, and one of their greatest, most successful eras. And you know, people from all over the world coming to take photos. I mean, I saw people from Australia and Asia. Well, Australia and other parts of Asia, and so there was a family from Minnesota was there that came over, and we had a chat. Everyone getting their pictures taken outside of Anfield. I mean, it's for those who haven't been there, it's you feel there's an ambiance and a really eerie kind of ghost, you know, memories of successful past there. I mean, it's like that when you walk into a lot of these old stadiums, but Anfield more so than many. There's something really, really special about that place. I mean, there's an energy that you feel right when you walk up, and when you walk in, it's almost like, you know, when you go back to college or you go back to like an old school and you notice things that you didn't really see before, or even going into like the weird deja vu of going into a place you've never been before and feeling like you've seen certain things. It just has like a really emotional feeling when you walk in, whether you've been there or not. And so right away I felt the buzz again, but it was a little bit more intense than it's been in the past because of what they're doing in the Champions League. So there's Jurgen Klopp has been fighting against this successful history. I mean, from the moment he got there, he was trying to curb expectations and find a way to park that history for a moment while he built something. And day one, he was going in front of the cop after wins. And I remember, just like he did at Borussia Dortmund, going in front of the big yellow wall at the Westfalen Stadium and engaging with the fans and really respecting and honoring what they stand for, what they care about, but also tiptoeing that fine line of saying, listen, give us some time. A contrast is, you know, Jose Mourinho at Manchester United. I mean, their success is recent. So that's more difficult to manage because, you know, they want titles again now. Right. And, you know, he's been critical of the fans at times, and he's gone about it a different way, sort of reminding them that, listen, just because you were successful in the past doesn't mean it's going to happen now. But Jurgen Klopp has done such a good job of kind of parking that history, but now really bringing it out. I mean, he's inviting it now more so than he did before. And he's open to saying, you know, European nights and European trophies and big occasions, we're up for that. And the fans were really up for it. I mean, it was Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And
Bournemouth, like you said, following those big games, and he sends out his team.
His best team, his first team. I mean, I was sitting on the gantry, and we get an hour before the game, we get the lineups. And we saw it. And I was there on the gantry with Derek Ray, called my first game with him, which was excellent, a fantastic commentator. And we both looked at each other and said, yes. I mean, well done, Klopp.
Yeah.
Because he had every excuse to rest some guys, mm-hmm. to take some breaks, to not take Bournemouth seriously. But, of course, top four, they look comfortable. It's not a lock, so the league isn't irrelevant. They still need to perform. But he gave the fans a reason to stay excited and to continue the momentum of getting past Manchester City. And I just thought that was a brilliant move. And in the flesh, they're irresistible. I mean, the Salah, Firmino, Mane combination, you watch it on TV. You see how electric and dynamic it is. But I was so impressed with Firmino and his selflessness, his work rate. Many of the things you don't acknowledge that don't show up in the stats that you wouldn't see at home. I mean, just worked tirelessly to make sure that those guys got service and he helped transition the team to the attacking side of things. They were just great. Even in the lulls where sometimes they possessed the ball and weren't dynamic, they still would a ball over the top to Mane or Salah. They still would just find a way to ignite the crowd and to bring everyone on their feet at Anfield. So it was an incredible experience to watch the residue or the vapors of that exciting European night continue into the league, but also tactically, it's clear he's preparing for Rome already. Kind of like he used the Merseyside Derby.
Right.
He used that to play Wijnaldum in holding position.
Because we knew Henderson was out.
Yeah, and Emre Can was hurt, right? Yeah. So he played Henderson in that game against Everton, but played him advanced and played Wijnaldum deep to get him ready. And then Wijnaldum, didn't have a great night, but a good night against Manchester City. I mean, most don't have a great night against Manchester City. So what I thought he was doing was putting out their team. He played against a back three. Eddie Howe put out a back three for Bournemouth. And we've seen Roma surprised Barcelona in the second leg playing a back three because they're a 4-4-3-3 team. And DeFrancesco, and against Lazio the other day in a huge game in the league, brought out a back three again. So both these teams, Roma and Liverpool, seem to be using their domestic league. I mean, Roma nowhere near the title. I think they're 21 points off last time I checked. And Liverpool, obviously, nowhere near the title either. So both of these teams have the freedom to do that. But it sets up a pretty special first leg at Anfield. And all of the damage needs to be done there. I mean, they need to go to Rome, go to the Olympic Stadium with a cushion because, I mean, Roma hasn't conceded a goal in Champions League home. I mean, it's incredible. They are a defensive force. But De Rossi, as good as he is, and Nainggolan and Strootman, I mean, their midfield three can be gotten to. And Oxlade-Chamberlain, I think he's going to be. He was another performance in that game at Anfield I thought was special, and I think he's coming into his own. And by the way, credit to Klopp for getting him back on his A game.
I always think, what happened if Theo Walcott went to Liverpool? Could he be something doing something?
Because Everton's obviously not. I mean, he's on Merseyside, but Everton's not bringing out.
The Arsenal Oxlade-Chamberlain was sort of like, what do we do with this player? How do we use him? How do we get the best out of him? How does Arsenal use him effectively? We never saw this type of play from him.
Yeah.
Consistent attacking threat, goal scoring.
Yes.
Penetrating.
In the central midfield position that he's longed to play and only got a few opportunities for Arsenal to play. So, listen, I was there. I was at Anfield. I got carried away with the wave of excitement and belief and momentum. I think they can win the Champions League.
That was my next question.
Liverpool can win the Champions League.
Well, Graham Lasso said the same thing this weekend. He thinks that they're set up perfectly to win the Champions League.
Listen, if you look at all the teams that are left, I mean, obviously Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, the favorites for sure. Not only the quality of their squad now, but also their experience getting to a final. I mean, Liverpool, Klopp has gotten them to finals recently, and that's where they've kind of fallen short. So that's where you worry about the history of then they get there, and almost like Brendan Rodgers taking them to the title. Remember that slip against Chelsea? The big game against Manchester City, we go again.
Right.
Steven Gerrard in the huddle. I mean, the magic, the belief, it created a pessimism that was under the surface. There was this, is this the moment? Can we do something special? Because that history, I mean, the second most successful team in English football history, that history is dormant. And if it can come alive, I mean, winning a title, if they had for Steven Gerrard, his first ever, I mean, if they can do something special like that with Chelsea on the wane, with Arsenal on the wane, with Spurs still a part of a project moving into a new stadium, I mean, Liverpool could be poised for a new era, for a new dynasty. Now, it will never be like it was in the past because managers don't stay long, players move a lot, the modern game's different. But Jurgen Klopp is doing something special at Liverpool.
Do you think they can compete for the title next season?
Yes.
Do they need to strengthen?
Yes.
Where do they need to strengthen?
So they already have Naby Keita coming.
Mm-hmm.
If they have to keep Emre Can. They may lose him. That's a difficult one. If they do, defensive midfield is a must. I mean, Henderson can't play every game. We've seen that. So even rotating with Emre Can, they still were looking at some of those positions. So I would say overspend for a defensive midfielder and another center back. I mean, those are the two areas. Those are a must. Now, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Robertson, I think have made fullback positions less a must. I think they need another number nine as well. Firmino, as good as he is, you need another option. Someone that might be able to also be more of a goal scorer, number nine. I mean, Firmino's excellent, but if they go get another number nine, a defensive midfielder, a center back, I think they're in a title race.
Heard it here first.
Yeah. But go to Anfield. If you get a chance, I mean, I know that's like playing with Zidane. I mean, it's obvious.
Yeah.
Go to Anfield. All right, let's move on to the last topic. Manchester City. They did it.
They're champs.
Not only are they champs, which we all knew, Captain Obvious there, but, you know, we've been, you haven't been in the studio. PJ was here for a few of my rants about Manchester City. I mean, you've heard my rants in the studio. This is one of the best Premier League teams of all time. It is. I'm still there. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You know, and I'm not going to say don't at me. Come at me on Twitter. Because, listen, I get the arguments about greatness. And there is a subtle difference. It's not just semantics. There's a difference between great, the greatness of teams, dynasties, and something special, right? And a team being one of the best. This is the best Premier League team we've ever seen because they dominate in ways that no one ever has. They've tied the fastest that anyone's ever won the league. Mm-hmm. And the records are endless. I mean, they're going to score the most goals. Most away wins they already have.
They're on pace to have the most wins.
Yeah, I mean, most wins in a row, streak-wise. I mean, it's not just that they're going to win the Premier League title or win it early, right? Or have the most wins away or have all of these things, right? Other teams have done a lot of special things when it comes to stats. But use your eyes. No one has done it in a more dominant, aesthetically pleasing way. No one. I'm sorry. Go out there and find that team. Get the footage. I will sit down with you. I will come to your house. We will sit on the couch and watch that 99 Manchester United team, right? That's the team everyone wants to say is the greatest ever in the Premier League. Now, listen, you're right based on what they did. A treble, the important one, FA Cup, Champions League, Premier League, right? But go back and look at the fortune, right? The serendipity and the luck that you need to win big competitions, right? Pep Guardiola admitted that.
Right.
Now, Pep Guardiola deserves to be criticized for dropping out of the Champions League with powerful teams. Of course he does. But winning the domestic league and this Premier League harder than any in the past in terms of the managers that are there, Conte, Jose Mourinho, I mean, Jurgen Klopp.
Pochettino.
It's the best it's ever been at the top. Right. And the money top to bottom is enormous. I mean, you have Burnley, right, battling for Europa League positions. And so it's incredibly impressive they've done it. But that Manchester United team of 99, incredible team, 4-4-2. You know, I love the midfield. You know, it was Giggs. It was Scholes and Keane and Beckham, York and Cole up top. They didn't dominate the way that this Manchester City team dominates in the league, right? So let's start there. They Fergie time was born out of the fact that they could just wear you down, attrition, and go win games late, games that they weren't dominating, games that they were just in because they were relentless and they never gave up, and they had a lot of quality. But they won the league by a point, right? And Thierry was telling me other things about that season that I had totally forgot. And he was at Juventus, so he was watching from afar and had just come to the Premier League a season after that. But he said that go watch the FA Cup semifinal. Bergkamp misses a penalty. Schmeichel makes a save, but it's not a great Bergkamp penalty. Misses a penalty, one of the last kicks of the game, to knock Manchester United out of the FA Cup, and Arsenal go to the final instead, right? So right there, that's a bit of fortune that went Manchester United's way. Okay, you need the bounce to go your way. You need some luck. But then go to, you know, the Champions League final where Bayern Munich absolutely should have won that game. And two incredible goals in injury time. You know, the baby-faced assassin cheering him. Guys that weren't trusted that much during the season, come on, do something really special, right? You know, the league, they won the league by a point, and Arsenal lost to Leeds in May, I think their penultimate game, to open up the window for Manchester United then to go and win the title. So they were fortunate even to win the title.
They also lost three games that season in the league.
Yeah, and lost to Arsenal 3-0. That year.
Yes, they did, yep.
And so, like, you know, Manchester City have gone away to every major, I mean, Anfield's and Liverpool, their only kind of bogey team. I mean, home and away against Chelsea, home and away against Spurs, home and away against Manchester United. Obviously, the away game, or the home game against Manchester United this past season is the one everyone's going to use, forgetting the fact that in the first 45 minutes, it was the most dominant performance any of us can remember.
Right, right.
But, you know, now it's about next year. You said Liverpool, will they be there? Manchester City, how do they make sure they're there? Well, they're going to spend again. They need another center back. I mean, Vince and Company was incredible and defied the odds to make it back from a lot of chronic muscular injuries to play regularly, right? Otamendi is a much better player than he was before.
Made the team of the year.
Yeah. They're going to go, and I think Aguero, who now we know is going to have surgery or had surgery on that knee, that's going to be an area that they're going to strengthen. I mean, they have Gabriel Jesus, but they're going to, believe me, they're going to go get someone because I think Aguero maybe has one more season at Manchester City. They're going to get another defensive midfielder. I mean, they want someone. Gundogan has filled in there. They want someone to battle with Fernandinho. But really, everything is set to be there. I mean, the way they play, the system they have, how they understand it, that will only improve. So who else will catch up? Manchester United is the big question, right? They'll probably finish second this year. But I was there. I mean, they gifted Manchester City the title by losing to West Brom. So
the worst team in the league.
They go from one of the most incredible modern comebacks in Manchester United history to keep their rivals from winning, quote-unquote rivals, from winning the title. And then a week later, they lose to the worst team at home. And I was there. I was sitting 20 yards from Jose Mourinho. And for the first 45 minutes, he didn't say a word. He sat there in the technical area, arms crossed, and just shook his head like a disapproving parent. It was quite remarkable. And then after the game, he had comments about Manchester United overcomplicating the game. That's what he said, right? We overcomplicated it. Now, I think that was partly a shot at Paul Pogba. And listen, Paul Pogba had a terrible performance. He did overcomplicate the game. In the first half, he had a lot of freedom. He was venturing forward. He was off the leash, all the things that we've been saying we want to see from him, and he struggled. He struggled in the final third. He got stripped from the ball a couple times, tried a couple of low percentage passes, dribbling out of tight areas, and in the second half was pulled to play the deepest guy and then dragged around like the hour mark. And I watched him when he came off. Jose Mourinho turned, didn't give him the handshake. There wasn't any acknowledgement. And good on Paul Pogba. He went and sat on the bench. You have to know all the rest of the world sees you. You're on camera. They're showing you. And he didn't gesticulate, didn't pout, didn't do anything, just sat there. The big question about Manchester United moving on to next year is when Jose says that they've been overcomplicating the game recently, that's his fault. Do you want to know why they overcomplicate the game? They don't know who they are with the ball. They have no identity in an attacking sense. And the Old Trafford crowd was they were cheering at times. It was kind of an ironic cheer of almost pleading with them, almost begging them to start playing. It wasn't celebrating good movements. It was saying, come on, let's go to the Theater of Dreams. We've seen some of the best attacking football of our life. Come on, let's go. And look at Manchester City, the best attacking team in the Premier League, of course, this season, but I think historically, there's nothing complicated about the way they play the game. I mean, go watch them. Players stay in their positions. I mean, the patterns that they play and the positions that they hold, they've been drilled, tirelessly worked on with Pep Guardiola. I mean, it is so specific who he wants them to be on the field. Then magical moments, ingenuity. I mean, that's talent. But I watched in the second half against West Brom, Manchester United were clueless. They had absolutely no idea who to be on the ball. And what ends up happening is they're trained to, and Jose Mourinho's teams are trained to, have identity without the ball. Without the ball, you will not break us down. We'll be strong. We'll become packed. And listen, he's won a ton of titles that way. He deserves so much credit for being that sort of manager. But he's yet to prove. People throw out that Real Madrid team, right, that scored over 100 goals. Listen, that Real Madrid team was that team when he took them over. That was muscle memory. That was already there. That was Cristiano Ronaldo and some great players. Now moving into next season, I look at them and I say, if that's how they're going to close the gap, they don't know how to do that. So in this game, he subbed on every single attacking player they had. And it was almost like going into your closet and picking out all your favorite clothes and wearing them at the same time without thinking how they look together.
I don't know if you saw, he said in yesterday's presser before the Bournemouth game that he used every single attacker he had in his bench, and he almost thought about using Dwight York, who was sitting up in the stands.
But, you know, it looked like that, right? Yeah. There was no plan, there was no purpose to the players he was throwing out there. I think Rashford, Martial should have started the game. Rashford, that's a big problem. Moving on to next season, if they battle for a title, I'm not sticking around if I'm Rashford. As much as you love the club, you're an academy kid, you're one of, you know, he's one of our own.
Right.
You have to play. I mean, Dele Alli and he have similar appearances the past couple seasons. Dele Alli 69, I think Rashford has around 61, but Dele Alli started twice the games. I mean, Leroy Sané for Manchester City, who was a shortlist for the PFA Player of the Year, right? A nominee for PFA Player of the Year, is not better than Rashford. He is not better than Martial. I'm telling you, man, I've watched this kid play a lot. I got to watch him with the German Olympic team, got to watch him in Germany. He's fantastic. He's an excellent player. But he's been molded into that. Rashford the same, been molded, been trusted, been played through bad moments. And if Rashford was at Manchester City, or Martial if was at Manchester City, they would be playing at the level that Leroy Sané is playing at right now. I absolutely believe that, 100%. I don't think Leroy Sané has anything that those two players don't. Now, are there nuances and little difference to all of our games? Absolutely. But Rashford has to play. So if they want to be in a title race next year, they can't keep buying players that don't make sense. Bringing Alexis into this team, listen, I love Alexis. I think he's one of the great players of the Premier League. His numbers speak for themselves. But the reason he didn't fit in at Barcelona is he doesn't have a ton of discipline. He does play his own kind of street game. And in a side where Rashford was playing well and Martial were playing well off of the left side, now Alexis comes and they immediately get thrown into different positions or not in the starting lineup. That's a problem. You created a problem by signing a big player. And so I worry about this summer when it comes to recruitment, because right now they play very narrow. They crowd the center of the field. They have Valencia and Young basically having to create the game in wide positions and hope to be a devastating counterattacking team. That's just not going to be good enough to win a title next year when you have Spurs getting better, when you have Liverpool getting better. I mean, Chelsea, you'd have to think Abramovich isn't going to deal with this down moment in the mediocrity right that they're seeing this year. So, listen, Jose Mourinho's in unprecedented territory. He's never gone this long at a club not winning a title. He's probably going to leave empty-handed, especially this weekend they can't get past Spurs. I mean, that's it. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on him to spend right because they haven't been spending right. He criticized the team for that in the past, and now that's going to fall on him this summer. All eyes on who they bring in. You want to see him there. I mean, you have to give him credit. They're stable. They're going to finish second. But they've got a serious gap to close if they want to be in a title race.
I'm going to give you a Rebecca Lowe one quick question.
Yeah, rapid answer.
Does Pogba start on Saturday?
Yes.
Do they win?
No.
Okay, there you have it.
Bigger question, will Pogba be there next year?
I hope not, as a fan.
I think he will. All right, guys. I'm back. So good to be back home. So good to travel abroad. Love the pundit exchange. Love the reviews. Love you guys. Same with you.